Finally, this hour, a kitchen encounter in China.
My name is Li Zhenqing.
And he comes wielding very sharp instruments. Whoa, careful with that cleaver, Mr. Li. And careful of the fire.
Chinese cuisine, many, many times, big fire.
Oh, yeah.
Very beautiful.
Big fire.
Yeah, big fire.
I met Li Zhenqing back in April in Chengdu, China. This was before the Sichuan earthquake. I met him over a big blackened wok in a teaching kitchen at the Sichuan Higher Institute of Cuisine, which later came through the earthquake just fine. Sichuan, of course, is famous for its food with its mouth-numbing spicy heat. Li Zhenqing is an instructor there. He introduced me to the world of ma, and I haven't been the same since. Ma means numbing in Chinese, and that sensation is a distinctive characteristic of Sichuan food. It comes from the Sichuan peppercorn, in Chinese, hua jiao, meaning flower pepper. The Sichuan pepper isn't a pepper at all. It's an aromatic berry from the prickly ash tree. Those berries are dried, they turn a beautiful purplish color, and they're used with abandon in many of the dishes I ate in Sichuan. But there are other uses, too.
So in Sichuan, when you toothpick, you can take this, and after you feeling no ache.
If you have a toothache, you put a Sichuan pepper in your tooth,
yes.
It numbs it,
yes.
You don't feel a thing.
When you toothache, you can take this.
Li Zhenqing thumbs through a mound of Sichuan peppercorns he's going to cook with.
I like this very much because when you put a little, it's just a fragrance. When you put more, it's numb.
It makes you numb.
Yes.
It's a numbing. Should I bite it?
But take care.
Take care.
Yes.
Well, I pop a peppercorn into my mouth and chomp down hard.
Okay, so I've bitten on this peppercorn and it's, my tongue is tingling.
Yeah.
But it's not hot.
Yes.
It's just tingling. It's
lovely. My mouth starts buzzing, dancing with a fizzy heat. The taste fills my mouth. Fragrant, a little bit sour.
Okay, the tingling is now in my lips. It's moved from my tongue to my lips.
Me too. Me too.
But it's a good tingling. It's not painful. Yes.
So, the high quality.
Very high quality?
Mm-hmm. Yes.
Li Zhenqing stir-fries up a wokful of kung pao chicken, chicken with peanuts, with lots of hot chilies and Sichuan pepper. Before I came to Chengdu, the food writer Fuchsia Dunlop had told me I had to eat kung pao chicken, that it would taste totally different from the dish found in lots of Chinese restaurants in the States. And she's right. Li Zhenqing's kung pao chicken has layers of flavor I've never tasted before.
It has a kick.
No, it's a little chilly. It's great because as you eat it, you get this little burst of the sort of fragrant pepper flavor.
Yes.
It just sort of filters in the middle with the chicken and the peanuts.
Can you do these dishes after you?
I'm going to do it.
Yes?
You want me to make it?
Yes.
That's a challenge.
You.
I take that challenge.
Okay, no problem. Just try.
Okay.
But something is missing.
I think I need a hat.
Oh, yes.
Okay, with my white chef's hat on, I mix up the sauce.
And we need three of these.
Three of the vinegar, okay.
Yes. One. Two,
black vinegar,
three,
soy,
three.
Salt and sugar,
okay.
With cornstarch and water.
I need the big fire and put some oil and stir fry the chicken.
The chicken, okay.
The flame roars fiercely around the wok. I toss in the chicken mixed with the sauce. Relax, Mr. Li tells me. Easy for him to say.
Stir fry. Slowly.
Slowly.
My left hand is wrapped in a towel holding one handle of the wok. It's heavy and hot and harder than it looks. I slide the chicken out of the wok, most of it anyway. I toss in the hot chilies and Sichuan peppercorns, then ginger and garlic and scallions.
Stir fry, on the fire, stir fry.
Back in goes the chicken, and that's it.
Very good.
Now the moment of truth. Li Zhenqing takes a bite.
Mm. Very good. It's better than me, than mine.
No.
Yes, yes.
You're just
yes.
being nice to a stranger.
And he's too polite to mention I burned the chilies.
My mouth is tingling. In a good way. Thank you for my lesson. That was a treat. I don't think you get your hat back, though. I'm going to keep the hat.
Big chef. Big chef.
That cooking adventure from my visit to the Sichuan Higher Institute of Cuisine in Chengdu, China, back in April. If you want to try making authentic Kung Pao chicken yourself, you'll find a recipe at our website, npr.org. From NPR News, this is All Things Considered. I'm Melissa Block. Imagine a school where instead of pencils, the students come armed with cleavers and chopsticks. Instead of notebooks, their work is done in big blackened woks. And the smells. Oh, the smells. Ginger and soy, garlic and chili pepper and oil. Well, you have in your mind right now the Sichuan Higher Institute of Cuisine. It's in Chengdu, China, the capital of Sichuan Province. Sichuan, of course, famous for its fiery food long before it became famous for the earthquake in May. The cooking school reopened just a couple of days after the earthquake. I visited at a happier time in April. It's where the next generation of chefs is being trained, several thousand of them. I put on a white chef's jacket and poke my head into a classroom where second-year students are getting trained in three dishes. That's bullfrog. Fish-flavored stuffed eggplant. And that's squid with lychee flavor sauce. Second-year student Chong Le is showing us around. The instructor tells the students they have to cut the squid just right, or it won't blossom into a flower shape. It's supposed to look like a chrysanthemum. After class, it's practice time. The students scoot across the hall and get busy working on the dishes they've just learned. First step, sharpen your cleaver. It's the only knife they'll use. Whether they're carefully peeling ginger root, chopping mounds of garlic, whacking slabs of pork, or gently squeezing the seeds out of chilies.
If you don't do that, it's very easy to burn. Yeah, so that is why.
Very easy to burn if you have the seeds. Burn your mouth or burn in the wok?
No, that would be the color will be changed.
The color would be changed in the
so
wok.
Yeah, that is a scorch.
It would scorch, okay.
Yes, it's not good.
Chong Lu goes by Alex in English. He's 21.
Well, I'm from Chengdu.
The name Chong Lu translates to often happy.
Yeah. And are you often happy?
Yeah, definitely. Hilarious.
Alex first learned how to cook from his father, a hobby he practiced at home. Then when he graduated from high school, he made a big decision. He wanted to be a chef overseas.
I'm very romantic. I don't want to be just stay in China. I want to go abroad for working.
Chang Le says, if you're a chef in China, you don't have a lot of stature. So he says, I decided I'd definitely try to go abroad. I really want to go to the Mediterranean, he says, somewhere I can work and chill at the same time. That was Chang Le talking with me in Chengdu, China, back in April.
For Kitchen Window, I'm Bonnie Wolf. Susie Chang is a New England-based freelance writer and reviews cookbooks for the Boston Globe. She has written a piece on cold soups for NPR's Kitchen Window Online. She joins me today. Hi, Susie.
Hi, Bonnie.
It is the height of the summer heat, so we're going to talk about cold soups today. Who thought up cold soups?
Oh, gosh, Bonnie, you always ask me these hard questions. I don't know. I like to think that it started in the Middle East because you read about, you know, these wonderful early Near Eastern cuisines where they're always having these wonderful cold melon soups and ices and things like that.
Are cold soups in all cultures or in many cultures?
I think in many. I don't seem to run across them as much in the Asian, Japanese, Korean, Chinese cultures.
And it's not just cultures that have cold climates, because Scandinavians eat a lot of fruit soup. Talk about fruit soups a little bit.
Well, fruit soups are delightful. They're the one cold soup you can make with almost absolutely no effort whatsoever. Basically, you put the fruit in the blender and you add some juice. Some people like OJ. I like to put cranberry juice because I like to use red fruit, and it really gives it this beautiful jewel-like color. Hmm. And you just whiz it in the blender and strain it so that you get the little seeds out. If you're using raspberries or strawberries, that's essential. And every soup needs a little something to brighten the flavor, especially if it's a cold soup. We like to put something acid or sour or tart in it. So I like to put a little bit of lemon in my berry soups. And then I sweeten it with a little extra honey.
Hmm. Do you make melon soups?
I have in the past. I remember there was a wonderful, wonderful gourmet cover about 20 years ago. And on the front of it, there was a cantaloupe soup and a honeydew soup. And they'd been poured together so that you had this, you know, yin-yang symbol in the soup plate. It was really entrancing.
Some fruits, like watermelon, has so much liquid in it, you probably don't have to add very much.
Right, right. And the thing about these fruit soups is that they're really not terribly satisfying. They don't really fill you up. They're the perfect soup for those incredibly sticky, humid, horrible days when the heat's just pouring off your skin. That's what fruit soups are for.
The vegetable soups that we see more often, gazpacho has certainly become iconic of a summer soup. What are some other cold vegetable soups?
Well, I like to make these very smooth cold vegetable soups. I love gazpacho as well. But the smooth vegetable soups are, for example, velvet corn soup. There's a lot of different versions out there, and I've included one in my article. And there's zucchini soup, which I've always adored from the first time I had it in a restaurant in the summer one year. And then there's tomato soup, which you can also have during the middle of the summer, and cucumber soup.
Are these cream-based soups?
They are not, and that's the beauty of them. They're soups in which you use the freshest summer vegetables you can get. And you do them very simply if you can, using just a few flavor enhancers like onion or garlic, something to just give it a little bit of a mellow undertone. And then you just simmer them as you might simmer them for a hot soup, but you do it early in the morning and you cool it down. And in the evening, you have this delicious, deeply flavorful, but totally cold soup.
So a summer tomato soup, what would be involved in making that?
Well, here's the thing. With all of these cold soups, I recommend you do them in the morning every time because the vegetable soups all have some detail-oriented labor involved in the beginning. With the tomato soup, you want to get the really best, most concentrated flavor out of the tomato. You want to roast it or grill it. So I like to grill them and add in a little bit of red pepper because that just seems to emphasize the flavor of the tomato. So I grill the tomato and the red pepper, and then I sweat some onions in a pan, and I really let those onions soften down and get juicy and sweet. And then I add in the tomato, then I blend it all together. And you really want to blend tomato in particular really, really well because, you know, tomato has a tendency to have those little bits. And if you don't blend it really well and strain it really well, you'll taste those when it comes out.
Do you peel and seed the tomatoes?
Well, you do after you've grilled them. Mm-hmm.
You call for a blender. Can you do this in a food processor?
I really think you can't. I've tried many, many times. I've included in this story a list of blender tips at the end, and they are all from hard-won experience. I tried to use a food processor many times making soup, and what happens is that it's so wide, the bowl is so wide and so shallow, that the blade doesn't really get to hit every little bit of the soup. Whereas if you have a blender and you do it in small batches, the soup funnels down around the blade and it goes churning over and over and over again until the soup is just silky fine.
How long do the soups hold?
Oh, you know, I think that they can hold 2 or 3 days. I would re-blend them if you hold them longer than 3 hours.
All right, Susie, thank you so much.
You're so very welcome.
Good morning. I'm Steve Inskeep. A celebrity chef says he's sorry he recommended a salad ingredient that could kill you. Anthony Worrell Thompson told a magazine that tasty salads can include a plant called henbane, which would make for an interesting meal. The word henbane means killer of hens. It is deadly in large doses. Small amounts cause hallucinations. Before you ask what the chef was smoking, he explains he meant to name a different harmless weed called fat hen.